Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Friend of a Friend. It's your host, Olivia Perez. Happy Monday, everyone. I hope everyone is staying safe and sane this week. Please tell me that you're staying home and doing your part. Before we start this episode, I want to thank everyone who turned into our Thursday mini-series, Call Your Friends. It was the first one that I've ever done within the show. The response was so amazing. I got so many DMs from all of you sharing your experiences. And so thank you to all of you for that continued support. I'm also really grateful to all of my friends that came on who shared how they've coped with this pandemic and their challenging experiences across so many different industries and even cities around the world. We wrapped up the series last week, so if you're looking for some at-home inspiration or even just a friendly voice to listen to during this time, there are 6 episodes for you to binge, and they really help me feel supported and not alone during this. So I hope that they do the same for you. For today's show, I'm so excited to welcome my good friend, Joanna Simkin. We actually recorded this episode on the first Monday in May, which is also known as the Met Ball, also known as Joanna and the entire industry's Super Bowl. So it was particularly emotional, and I'm super glad that I got to check in on her and see how she's doing and talk about some career highlights during a time that feels quite lonely and challenging. Joanna is one of the most in-demand celebrity makeup artists and groomers in the game, with a clientele list that includes Issa Rae, Megan Rapinoe, Zayn Malik, Kerry Washington, Storm Reid, Troy Sivan, Frank Ocean, and more. She also happens to be one of my favorite people in real life and a favorite to follow on Instagram for her absolutely unapologetic realness. She posts everything from issues she's passionate about to a behind-the-scenes look at how she creates some of the top beauty trends that hit the red carpet and her everyday life in LA as a wife and mom to her adorable daughter, Noelle, aka Smush. In this episode, Joanna tells us all about her upbringing in San Francisco, what it was like moving to New York in the early 2000s, and how she skipped beauty school and went to beauty boot camp by getting her start in doing makeup for music videos. She also fills us in on how she utilized Twitter to get her first client and then went on to achieve an extremely successful career grounded in being an ally and a champion for inclusivity and diversity. Here's my friend, Joanna Simkin. I'm so excited to have you on the show. I distinctly remember the first time I met you. We were sitting next to each other having breakfast. Yes. And we went through like the whole thing. I was like, what do you do? And I had released my podcast for the first time, like literally 3 days before. And I was like, I guess I have a podcast now.
Right. You're like, I kind of have this podcast. I was like, okay. Like kind of. Okay.
Because it had literally come out like 3 days before I met you. Aww. And now we're here. And that's really exciting.
It's literally been a year. From that day, actually, just in my, maybe because it's been a year. I think it popped up. It was a photo, yeah, I took of you. Just you like sitting in a chair. I was like, oh.
I know. It's been a year, which is so crazy.
That's crazy.
Like, that's the time that we're at. I know. But so back to you. What was your first experience with makeup?
Oh, ever. My oldest friend, her aunt, like I grew up in the Bay Area, has kind of like a lot of leftover, you know, crunchy hippie, not makeup-y people, my mother included. And my best friend, whose mom is super hippie, but she, her aunt was always really glam. This was like the 80s. So like 80s glam, you know, hair was teased, but full makeup, whatever. And, you know, my mom didn't wear makeup and I would go over there and I'd be like in the bathroom just staring at her putting on makeup and being like, I am fascinated. Like, I loved it from then. Cut to my aunt giving me like one of those little cheesy plastic, you know, you open it and there's like 15 eyeshadows with like a spongy, and then you flip it open and then there's 20 lip glosses, like all, you know, one of those boxes. And I just played with that thing till like it was in the pans. I must have been like 9. I don't know. I kind of like almost hid it from my mom because she was so like anti makeup and anti, you know, gender conforming, like girls shouldn't have to wear makeup and feel that way. And I was like, I like it. Yeah. So probably, yeah, like as a child, that was my first time. And then kind of, I wore makeup early and I used to take art class. I never took a makeup class, but I took art classes. I think I kind of like, now that I think back to how I was doing my makeup, even when I was like 15 and 16, I definitely, this is way before Instagram or even before the internet, quite frankly, that's how old I am. I was figuring out how to like highlight and contour a little bit and understanding like where light should go and where dark should go. Cause I just think about how I did my makeup then and how I would do my friends' makeup. And it was like, right. I mean, it wasn't good per se, but it was right. You know, the concept was there.
But wait, you never took a makeup class ever?
Once I decided I want to do it, I took like a special effects class and I learned how to do like scabs and all that stuff and bruises, which has randomly come in so handy on the most random of jobs. But it's funny, like as an artist, I'm like, yes, technique can be taught. Like, I think the value of a makeup class now is if you want to go maybe into film and understanding what different cameras do to dimension on the face, what different lighting does, things like that. I'm like, I don't know that like technique, I guess, can be taught, but like your eye is like the thing, right? Because you're going to have your own perspective of what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, I guess obviously art can be taught and makeup can be taught to a degree and then it can help. But yeah, no, I didn't take any formal makeup classes where I learned a new technique or, you know what I mean? It was just aside from like the bruising and scabs
right.
and all that.
I mean, look how many people are like self-taught now.
Especially now. The entire internet, yeah. Especially now. And I think, yeah. And I think that's the way to do it, honestly. And to a point, like, I don't think that you should take what you're seeing on a makeup tutorial on the internet, like literally, but I definitely think there are techniques that can be adopted. It's all about having a point of view and an aesthetic of your own. You know what I mean? So if you can absorb the technique, but then also apply your aesthetic and your point of view to it, that is really like the marriage between like, I know how to do makeup. It's going to give a client the coverage they want. And, you know, it's going to have staying power if they're on a red carpet and gone from me, or it's going to look good on camera, but also that, you know, you can see my point of view in it and you can see artistry and it's not like a cookie cutter Instagram face per se. So I think like that's like the fine line of the internet people being self-taught. But
it's funny that you say that, because I did an episode about 2 months ago with Sheena Yatanis. She's the founder of Kosas Beauty, which I love. I use all the time.
Okay.
And she had a really good point where I was just like, I know how to do makeup because I grew up dancing and I was taught how to do stage makeup, which was like just the absolute basics, like a red lip, powder the shit out of your face,
no shit,
and an eyeliner. And a ton, and like, I knew how to do
like,
oh God, I got to send you some photos. You're going to be like, my God, Liv. And I knew how to put on like false eyelashes, like all by the time I was 9. But like as an adult now in this industry where like, it's all about like contouring and like baking your face and like all these terms, like these terms that like actually feel really overwhelming for me. She said something that was really awesome that I would love to hear her thoughts on. She was like, you know, I think a lot of people think they can go on YouTube and watch someone do their makeup and then immediately be able to do it. And then they're a makeup artist and then they know how to do makeup. But like, just because you watch Van Gogh paint the Starry Night doesn't mean that you're going to paint the Starry Night.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that,
and I was like,
yeah, that's like, that goes back right to like your point of view and your, I cannot tell you how many times, like when I say I'm a makeup artist, if I meet someone new, first of all, people get so judgy with themselves. Like, oh my God, don't look at my face. And I'm like, I wasn't even thinking about that. Like, I'm like, you, what do you do? You're a tax accountant. Oh, don't look at my receipt.
Don't look at my taxes.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, are we really thinking about work like that? Like when we're not working? So many women say, oh, I just have no idea how to do my own makeup, so I never wear it. And I'm like, I think you have that backwards. You never wear it because you don't know how to do it. You should be doing it if you want to wear it. And it's like, who cares if it's wrong? It's like makeup, but it's also like, you cannot just go on Instagram or YouTube, watch something and be like, I've got this. And I think people like expect to feel, I'm like, there's nothing, I can't do anything just watching it one time on YouTube.
So when did you move out of San Francisco?
I moved out of San Francisco 2002. I moved to New York, March of 2002. I just want to be where it was happening. I always wanted to be in New York. My mom's from New York. My mom thinks I moved to New York because she spent my whole life complaining about New York. So it was like one of those, like, mother daughter.
It was your act of rebellion.
It was my rebellion. She was like, I'm convinced because I said New York is awful. That's why you went. I was like, no, I'm like, I went to New York because, like, I grew up during, like, Biggie, hip hop, East Coast, West Coast, New York Undercover. Like, New York was so dope and glamorized to me.
I think it is for most people.
Yeah, I think I'm like, who doesn't want to? I think, like, moving to New York in your 20s is like, that's what you should do. I think everyone should do it.
Completely agree. I literally could not imagine what my life would be like if I hadn't made that move.
Same. Absolutely. People are like, where are you from? And I'm like, I need you to be a little more clear about the question. Like, New York raised
me. Great response.
Yeah,
it's true.
New York raised me. Like, when people are like, I'm totally like, are you a Cali girl? Are you a New Yorker? I'm like, I'm definitely 100% both. I have my Cali vibes, but I'm like such a New Yorker. I lived in New York totally. Almost 20 years. I'm such a New Yorker.
It's funny. I think if you stay there long enough, it's such a part of your identity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's just different than any place. It really is. And it is the kind of place that just becomes part of you.
I had an extremely strong, like, gravitational pull to be there.
Same.
I never second guessed it.
By the way, if you're not even a New Yorker, unless you hate New York also.
If you don't hate it.
I hate New York just as much as I love New York.
True.
It's the best worst city in the world.
What was your first job in New York?
I was a waitress at Justin's, which was...
No way.
Yeah, which was Puff's. Oh, sorry. What's his name? Diddy? Puffy? Diddy? What's his name now? P. Diddy? Well, anyway, Sean Combs.
You guys should see my face right now. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know he changed his name.
He's changed his name so many times. Anyway, I always think of him as Puff because I'm old.
Same.
But yeah, Puff had a restaurant in New York and I walked in there and got a job as a waitress and I had never been a waitress before. But I just wanted to be in the mix. I was like, I need to, like, meet people and I need a job. And everyone was like, you should waitress. You make a ton of money in New York. I was like, okay. I think I did it for like 2 months, if that. I was like, I can't take this. I hate being a waitress. Never again. Now I know why I've never been a waitress and I'm never doing it again. Yeah, but it was great because I met like one of my best friends there. And yeah, just a ton of contacts. And it was actually like a fun thing. And it was like a great crash course into New York City for me. This was like the hub of like New York people coming in. They wanted to have food. They came in to pregame for a party. The bar was always rocking. I was like, this is like, I worked, even though it was a restaurant, it was essentially nightlife. Like, yeah, it really was. And we would literally shut down the restaurant like every night and walk down the street as like a crew, like the staff, the waitresses to Cheetah. And yeah, it was just like a great time.
I love that.
Yeah, it was so fun. It was the best.
So how did you take the leap from that to your first beauty job?
So my first beauty job, I worked at John Barrett Salon in Bergdorf Goodman, which is no longer in Bergdorf Goodman. I think they have like their own salon now. But I wasn't doing makeup. I was a manager of the salon and I was still kind of like, I would do makeup on the side a little bit here and there. And I met someone who would hire me into corporate beauty, who was Steve Stout. And at the time he was, I guess he was CEO. I don't even remember honestly, but he was an investor in a company called Carol's Daughter. He just really kind of wanted like young creative people. And I met him through a friend and the salon had somehow been involved in like a shoot that he knew about. So he took that to mean that I was like super connected in beauty and all that. And he was like, oh, I'm hiring people. And he basically like recruited me into marketing and PR for Carol's Daughter. And I was like, I'd never really done it before, but he was like, I honestly just want like young creative people who have good ideas. And he's like, you're clearly passionate about beauty, which I was. So I went in there and I was there for 3 years. And that was really where I learned the whole corporate side of beauty. And I started to really understand that you could have a job as a makeup artist. I was booking photo shoots and campaigns and press. I was like, you know, approving budgets. And I was watching these rates come in for glam where I was like, what, a day? Like, are you kidding me? And I was like, wait, you can really do this. And I met another friend of mine who was a film makeup artist. And she would call me in any day that she didn't have to use like a union assistant. She would call me in and I was getting practice on set a little bit. And in 2008, I just was like, had it with New York. And like the top of 2009, I said, I'm going to move to LA and I'm just going to be a makeup artist. But I had like amazing, amazing contacts at Carol's Daughter. And the Rolodex was a very entertainment heavy Rolodex because that was what Steve had come from, entertainment. So a lot of our press and marketing and all that had gone through like record label things and having artists like, you know, and like Mary J. Blige was like one of our faces, and Jada Pinkett. So it was like a lot of like entertainment stuff was happening. And that work just worked out really well for me because I'm a good relationship person, I'm a people person. And, you know, people would still call me for Carol's Daughter related stuff. And I just still remember like one of the first jobs I got as a makeup artist was a video commissioner called me and was like, hey, we're shooting a video. Like, could you just like send me some Carol's Daughter? There's like a bathroom scene where he's going to sing to her. I think it was like a Trey Songz video. It was like, he's going to sing to her. We'll throw Carol's Daughter up in the vanity. And I said, oh, you know, I don't work at Carol's Daughter anymore. I moved to LA doing makeup. And she and I had such a good relationship. She was like, you do makeup? I didn't even know that. Didn't even like ask to see a book or whatever. But because we had such a great relationship, she was like, do you want to come and just do the girl in the video then? And I was like, oh, okay, sure. Okay. Yes. It really fell from there because music videos are such like a whirlwind world. And it's like a lot of the same directors, producers, EPs, hair, makeup, just get rotated around. It's like such a grind. And I just tell people like that was my crash course into makeup because in the first year, I probably did 50 to 100 videos. I don't even know. I would have to sit and count. And
wow,
it was crazy. But it's such a great training ground because you learn your set etiquette, right? You understand how fast you need to turn people over. You understand it's, hey, we have 8 dancers. They're all different, you know, skin tones, eye shapes, ethnicities. But everyone needs to have a smoky eye and a red lip. And we need them all in 3 hours, camera ready. I mean, that's just like trial by fire. Like, okay. 8 different eye shapes, smoky eye. What am I doing? 8 different skin tones. Learn how to master skin fast. And so, yeah, it just really, it made me fast. It made me good. It made me diverse. It was just like a great, I just tell people like, if you're starting, if you can just get into that music video circuit, it is brutal and no pay, but that is like a crash course in like set makeup and just getting it moving.
Hey everybody, Gabby Reese here. Please join me for my show where we're going to be talking about all things self-care. And I don't mean just eating and exercise. I'm talking stress, marriage, relationships, parenting, business, transitions. How do we figure out a way to be our best selves each and every day? So whether you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen, please join me. If you'd like, rate, subscribe, and leave us a review. If you want to see some of the behind the scenes action, just follow me at Gabby Reese. And remember, don't miss new episodes every Monday.
So last summer, Joanna and I were on a panel together for Shopify, and it was really great. When was it? Last August, right?
It was the day after we moved our entire family to Los Angeles. So it was August 10th.
Yes, I'm the biggest supporter of this move. there was something that you said on that panel that really stuck with me for a while. And I think it applies for every industry, and also kind of piggybacking off something you just said, you were like, you know, I moved to LA to be a makeup artist. And there was a piece of advice that you gave in the panel where you were like, I hate when people introduce themselves to me and say, I'm trying to be a makeup artist, or I'm aspiring makeup artist. And you were like, do you do makeup? Can you like do my makeup? Do you study makeup? Like, okay, you're a makeup artist.
Yeah.
And I think that like that conviction is super rare.
You have to claim it.
Especially because like you're moving across the country and being like, no, like I'm going to be a makeup artist instead of like, I'm going to go to LA and try.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference in attitude between those two things.
There is, what does Yoda say? There is no try. There's only do. People are like, how did you become a makeup artist? And like I said, I was a makeup artist. There are books about success. There are, you know, Think and Grow Rich. There's all these books, and there's an underlying lesson in all of them. And the lesson is that you have to set a goal and know the goal and just work to the goal. Once you reach a goal, then you can move the goalposts. But like if you're shooting an arrow, you need a target, right? Otherwise, it could go anywhere. Draw your target so that when you pull back, like, yeah, you're going to keep shooting, but eventually you know when you've hit the target. And then you can move the target again. Yeah, you have to claim what's for you and what, yeah, that's something's not for you until you claim it.
I've been trying this new thing, especially in this environment where I've learned that you can have zero expectations. It's like, okay, now I'm setting 6-month goals, and underneath those 6-month goals, I'm setting monthly goals. That to me has felt 10 times more achievable than being like, okay, in a year, this is where I want to be. Cause it's like, how am I going to take the steps to get there? And if I don't get there, then I beat myself up. It's like, did I accomplish that goal in that month? Because it was actually like tangible and feasible and I could actually like get it done.
Yes, I agree that especially when, you know, obviously there are variables and nobody can control right now. Like no one knows what's happening. No one knows what's going to happen. No one knows what the world's going to look like next week, much less next year. So I think like cutting your goals down into smaller segments, make them much more achievable. And because, like, even not in quarantine, I just think in real life that's important too, because, like, you need a win. A win will keep you going. Like, that's what I would say. Like,
totally.
Like, when I'm working out, and people say this a lot, like, if you kind of fall off the workout wagon, it's much harder to start because it takes a while to see some results. And then when you see the results, you're like, let me keep going. But, like, yeah, so same thing with any kind of goal that you set for yourself. I think, like, you need a win.
Okay, so you're on the music video circuit. How did you go from that, which kind of feels like a well-oiled machine to me, to then going to having your own individual clients?
So videos are great because obviously you meet a ton of people, including obviously there's celebrities there because it's artists that have videos. So I really got pulled a lot into grooming at first because I was getting, you know, with, hey, we know you're doing the dances, but can you come groom Trey Songz or this rapper or this singer or Tyrese or whoever it is, right? And then this was also kind of at the time, this was like where my PR and marketing lessons from Carol's Daughter kind of came into play, because I really had like a masterclass in how to, you know, manipulate the media. And this was at the launch of Twitter, like when social media really kind of like jumped from like just Facebook connection to like I feel like when Twitter happened, like Twitter and Instagram became like social media became like marketing platforms. And because I had a marketing and PR background, I understood that early. And this was way before Instagram, but even just Twitter. So also at that time, Twitter was such a new tool that you would sign up and it would say, hey, do you want to add all these people from your address book? And everyone was just like, sure, because no one knew how it worked. I luckily had this very good Rolodex of video commissioners and celebrity managers and celebrities, and they were doing the same thing. Celebrities were like, sure, I'm adding people in my contact. Why not? I don't know how this works yet. So I understood that I had an audience on Twitter that like people didn't really understand as an audience. So I also had come from the school of marketing and PR where you know not to give away too much. Like I knew how to give away just enough to tease things. So I knew not to blow out projects online and share things that shouldn't be shared until a final project was out, but I knew how to sound busy. You know what I mean? And I think that worked to my advantage because a lot of the right eyes, like times the right content from me of looking busy and just Twitter, like, hey, on set today with da da da, you know what I mean? Just that. And this, like, again,
there's something you're saying there that I totally hear. And I know it sounds like a little slimy, but seeming busy is kind of a hack. It's kind of a career hack.
It's absolutely a career hack. People love to tell you that there's a difference between like busy and working, or like the words busy work. I'm like, you have to look, everything's an illusion. You have to look popping. And I think like there's a value to that. I was on set. Yes. So totally. Like if I tweet on set shooting new Jay-Z video, that sounds way cooler than, hey, I'm stuck in this little tiny room getting all these dancers ready and we're grinded. Like, it's like, hey, I'm shooting a new Jay-Z video. And people are like, oh, you know, but I had people that were video commissioners, executive producers, talent managers, celebrities watching that. Yeah. So I had shot a video for Hello, Good Morning with Puff. And full circle moment, Puff. And there was a woman named Ro who at the time worked for him, and her job was literally just to make sure that like Ciroc was getting like visibility in the videos, right? She worked for Ciroc. And Twitter was new. We followed each other. And maybe 6 months later, she DM'd me on Twitter, and it turned out she had left Ciroc. And we followed each other. Hey, I work for a management company. And we rep Salida Ebanks, who was a Victoria's Secret model at the time, a big model and an actress. And she was going to be doing a State Farm commercial. She was like, can you do her makeup? And it literally had just, because Ro had followed me that day on the Hello Good Morning set and then had continued to watch what I was posting and was like, here's a makeup artist that we can book for this. And my job is to book this makeup artist. And like, I had a good time on set with her and whatever. So that became like my first kind of really big, like with a national commercial. I negotiated a great rate because I had been assisting someone who had done commercials. So I was like seeing what the rates should be. Yeah. From there, I think it started to kind of jump. And, you know, once you get one thing, then the person that I am too, like, I'm not ever gross about, you know, hey, we tag me. Can we do this? You know, people used to say, how do you use Twitter? Like, what do? You just get on there and you say, I'm a makeup artist, book me. And I was like, that's basically the only thing I don't say. You know what I mean? I'm like, no,
right.
Like that's not marketing. But because I was never gross or pushy, you know, cl- clients have always tagged me and posted about me, and you know, and it, you know, you just build a genuine following that way from people that are into that client, or you know, I'm, you know, you get tagged all the time by people, and you know, you just watch your followers jump. And you know, now we're kind of in this time where your follower count matters to get booked, you know, matters for brands to partner with you. And yeah, that's, it's, you know, social media has become a complete marketing tool. I was just like able to kind of be an early adapter to it and to know how to work it.
Besides the fact that Joanna has probably one of the best Instagrams, one, you're just like unfiltered and it's real and it's fucking great. It's phenomenal. You're also a good news resource. There's a lot of Noelle content that makes me happy.
I try to keep it balanced.
It's a good balance. But I think what I really like is you're very open with the process that goes into creating a look. Literally, I can't think of a single look that you've done that I've loved where it seems like you've just gone in and like done a glam moment. It always has something to do with the outfit.
Mm-hmm. I definitely, because sometimes I think, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have some really great regular clients. And what that means is that I do them over and over. And I think it's easy to get stuck.
And that's kind of my point, is that it's like, there's something really cool about you kind of like lifting the curtain on that relationship that you have with these clients. And like, we kind of get this like behind the scenes look of like how you are building this complete moment with them.
I think that as much transparency as you're able to give is important, because, and that was a lesson that I learned when I worked in marketing. And that was one of our big lessons at Carol's Daughter. That was like a thing that was reinforced to us over and over, was people want to feel a connection. They want to feel like you're authentic. They want to feel like you're real. And people can tell when you're not. They can tell when you're bullshitting. And honestly, it just takes so much energy. Like, you think about, like, you know, when people say, like, if you're like lying to your partner, like, you got to remember, that's so many more details you got to remember if you're lying. Do you know what I mean? I'm just like, just you is the thing too. Cause it's also like, you've made it this far betting on yourself. And I follow and I'm friends with this woman named Mylik Teal. She runs this business called Curl Box, which is kind of like, she basically saw a need in the market. Like, was it Birchbox, which was like the subscription where you would get like beauty products.
Yes.
So she saw a need for Black women, and she literally created like a Black hair subscription called Curlbox. But she tweeted this thing, and she'll like repost it on her stories every now and then. She tweeted it from like 2011. And I favorited it then. And I still like, I'll repost it when she says it. And she said, it's something like, I can give you the recipe, the ingredients. I can tell you how small to chop everything. I can tell you exactly how to add it, what order, how many stirs. She was like, I'm the secret sauce. Like, there's just like that thing that's you, and that's what you need to tap into. And you have to tap into that thing that's unique. And that's what people respond to. And I think like people are scared to do that. Maybe it's an insecurity thing. Like, you maybe don't like yourself so much. So you think, or what could they like about me? You know what I mean? I'm like, you have something. Like, there's a thing that people are interested in, and they want to subscribe to, and they want to respond to. And if they don't, guess what? It's fine. There's 7 billion people on the planet. Everything is not for everybody. There's going to be people that respond, and those are your people, and build that community out. And I think you want to feel real, and you want to feel connected. And I mean, I think especially now during quarantine, I think like we all want to connect, and the more that you can give to people to connect to, the more they're going to want to connect to you.
You guys don't follow Joanna on Instagram, please go follow her. She's done like some incredible looks from like Storm Reid, Issa Rae, like Kerry Washington. It's like, honestly, like the most incredible artistry of all time. And it's just, it's really fun to watch you work with, I feel like, people that like aren't just your clients, are your friends. And there's like such an important, I think, perspective that you bring into that, that like, you know, I feel like it's a collaborative art that you're doing. It doesn't feel like this like exclusive thing that I like can't partake in. And I think that's really important in the beauty industry right now. And like, one thing that I ask everybody that's in beauty when they come on the show is like, there's such a call for transparency, whether it's like in male grooming or like Botox and fillers. And like, everyone just wants to be open about the things that we're doing to make ourselves look the way that we do. And I think that's important.
I think it's super important. I follow so many random pages that I think, and I don't know if the intent behind them is sort of, is maybe like a little negative or something, but it's a lot of like celebrity before and after, or.
I hate it. It really bothers me.
It bothers me.
Because they feel negative.
Because it feels negative. But I do like to see, I'm curious, like as someone who works in beauty, I follow one page and I don't remember which one it is exactly, but they will take like the like the Getty image, and they'll take the image the celebrity posted and then they GIF it so you can see, like, and I'm always fascinated. I just think it's such an interesting study in like art insecurities and how they become trends. So I'm fascinated to see what people who we would look at and be like, you're perfect, what they tweak. Do you know what I mean? And I always, yeah. And I think about how that leads to beauty trends. I always think about how like in the early mid 2000s, being super tan was a thing. And that clearly came from J-Lo. And that came from, I would assume that that's a little bit of an insecurity, being like a Puerto Rican girl from the Bronx who was really fair compared to everyone else. And she was like, I want to glow. And they gave her a glow. And not, then like, because you were the it girl, everyone wanted to glow. Or like, I think about how the super bright under eye was like a thing maybe like 6 years ago. And I think like Kim Kardashian has clearly had some insecurities about like her natural dark under eye circles. And then she was like super bright concealer, and that became a trend. So I think it's fascinating how like someone who can be considered like one of the most beautiful people in the world has a look they've created that was rooted in insecurity that became a global trend. Is that like, do you know what I mean?
So interesting. So I've never thought about that, but I think you're 100% right, where it's like, I'm going to say this with the kindest of heart right now, but it's like, we see so many people. And again, I think this goes back to maybe a Kardashian, like funnel down, trickle down into society, but like the big lips, mm-hmm. the cheek,
the contour,
like the bright eyes, like the contour. Like there was an amazing article actually, and I think it was New York Times. I'm really sorry, guys. I will try my
about
to
the
find
morphing
it.
Of the Instagram face.
Was it the New York Times?
I think it was the New York Times.
It was either that or the New Yorker. It was like it was all about how like we have this very like cyborg looking face that everybody mm-hmm. either like manipulates their face or like uses a ton of makeup to get online. And it's so interesting how that came about, because it's obviously like it isn't a trend that we've had in the past. And like, I think we can all admit that it definitely comes from like a more openness to like fillers mm-hmm. and injection, and maybe like a bit more of like a stronger presence in the makeup world. But it's interesting that like, when you think about it, all those things come from insecurities. You're right.
Like I said, so I follow the pages and I don't love, but sometimes they're like, they're just posted without caption. They're, you know, it's not like, you know, obviously like the comment section, like the first rule of the internet is don't read the comments. Like the comment section can get pretty gross, but I definitely am fascinated just seeing like what these sort of presumably quote unquote perfect people see. Like the thing that bothers you about how you look, no one else is looking at, because like I'll sometimes see like a before and after when they do the GIF, and I'm like,
did you need really? To do that?
Did you need to do that? And I'm just sort of fascinated by it. And I think like that goes back to like the transparency conversation of like, obviously everyone wants to like, especially when you're posting, like I said, when I post a static photo, I think about it more. It's like, which one did I like? You take 700 selfies, like what's the perfect angle? What? And no one wants to sort of see this imperfect thing. But I also think that's why I think I get like so candid and raw and makeup free on Instagram stories. And I'm just talking, like, I don't care, because I'm just like, at the end of the day, we're all just real people. And I think it's important that we all see that. It's also like a weird thing to be in a business that's literally designed to, like my job is to like perfect everything, and now I'm sitting here saying we need to be more real. So it is, it's obviously a weird balance that I live in.
No, I think that duality is important though, because we should be able to like enjoy beauty for all our personal enjoyment and the artistry of it and the fun of it without having to feel like we need to like that it's masking something. I feel
like absolutely. And by the way, if you want to mask something, I mean, go for it. Like, to each your own. And but I definitely do miss sort of like the things that make us different. You know what I mean? I you know, my explore page bothers me right now. It's weird.
I feel like you have been such a part of so many beautiful moments that have really like brought diversity to the forefront of the beauty industry. And to me, I've always really admired you for that as someone that like, I feel like you walk into these situations with like no intention, but just being like the best ally for inclusivity and diversity that you possibly can be.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear a little bit about your thoughts on just working with so many different people, and also like the artistry that goes into it, and kind of like how you, back to like your music video days, and how you were in the position of like having to do makeup for people of like all color, all eye shapes. And like, I'm sure that that prepped you a lot for this position.
I love Black women. I do. Black women are dope. I talk about this a little bit on Dropping Gems too, is that I grew up in the Bay Area in the 80s and 90s, which is very different than the Bay Area of today. It was very diverse in a not even trying to be diverse kind of way. It just was. And I've had this conversation. It's funny. I've had this conversation with Ali Wong, the comedian who's from the Bay Area, whose makeup I've done. I've had this conversation with Megan Rapinoe from the women's soccer team, who is also from Northern California at that time. Ebro from Hot 97. Like, it was a time in a space. And it's funny. I had this conversation the other day. Someone asked me about it. And I was trying to analyze what that was. And I think it kind of came from, like, people would always tell me New York was super diverse, and it is, but it's also not. It's very segregated. And I think the Bay had, you know, especially in the 80s and 90s, we were the children of, like, the hippies that came, and the Bay was like that place, right? So there really was like this sort of like free, loving, everyone's the same as long as we're peaceful and loving type of thing that like was a magical thing. And like, we're the kids of those parents, right? I just black women are dope and black girls been dope since I was in high school. And it was never like a thing like, oh, she hangs out with like black girls and Latin girls and Asian girls. Like, everyone just hung out in the Bay. So there was that. As an artist, I see colors and I see dimension, and brown skin is so beautiful. It has so much depth and dimension and natural radiance. I always want to make sure that black women and their beauty is highlighted to the fullest extent. We were watching last night on Disney Plus, The Proud Family, which was like a cartoon that came out in like 2000. It was like a black family cartoon. And I was showing it to Noelle, and I totally had forgot. There's like these little three characters called the Gross Sisters, and the little boy Sticky, they're like gray green. And the little boy Sticky refers to them as ashy. He's like, they're ashy. And Noelle didn't know what ashy meant. And I was like, how can I describe ashy to her? And I was like, I guess kind of like dry skin. She's like, but why are they gray green? I was like, well, like, look at, and I was like, let me just Google. So I Google ashy. And like, one of the first things that comes up is this picture of Issa. And I was like, wait, what? And it's an Essence headline that says 7 highlighters that will not turn ashy on brown skin. And I thought, that's exactly what I love to do. I love that makeup that I did on my client is literally the banner image for how to not be ashy. Like, how to just look the most gorgeous, glowing, luminous that you can look. There was not literally any other celebrity photo in the article. It was just photos of the product under it. And the image of her, of which I had done the makeup, was the banner image for how to not be ashy. And I was like, that's the thing. Like, that's what makes me happy. But it's that thing. It's that thing where I think black women need to be seen as beautiful and by everybody. And I, you know, I think like it's happening, but I think there's such a long way to go. And in beauty as well, like brands, any brand that launches right now and doesn't have diverse shades. And I'm not just talking about foundation. I'm talking about, you know, does your neutral eye palette speak to, like, cause there's ashy browns and there's warm browns. So like, when you say this is a neutral eye palette, like, for what skin complexion are you talking about? Can I use your neutral brown eyeshadows on everybody? Like, if I can't even get that together, then I just know, like, if you send me a PR package and the first thing I think is I can't use this on my clients, then I know this entire line is not for me. And I try to be vocal about that. Like, I try to say that on my Instagram stories, and I say it on podcasts and in interviews. And I had this conversation also, with Elaine Welteroth maybe like 2 years ago, and how she was saying how like she felt that like black women on magazine covers was a trend, but like the magazines, like, she's like, what happens when I open the page? Like, who wrote this story? Who did you hire to do the photos? Who, you know what I mean? She's like, so if you, she's, yeah, like, are we selling your magazine, but like, you're not actually doing the work behind the scenes? You know, and that was like a conversation, right, we had, you know, it's just like, it's such a multi-layered conversation. And I think I just try to, yeah, to your point, be an ally as much as I can. Like, try to push people forward. There are ways that I see it that like only a makeup artist would even understand, where I'll get to set for, you know, certain magazines who generally have always had, you know, white women on their covers. And, you know, the makeup direction is they want very quote unquote natural makeup, minimal foundation. We just want her to look light and fresh. And I'm like, that says to me that you have not even had enough black women in front of a camera for this magazine, that you don't understand lighting and what pigment and melanin and lighting and camera lenses do. I work with many black women, and I understand how much product needs to be on light skin and how much product needs to be on dark skin to both look like natural. And I usually, like, I have my clients now, I just tell, I like smile and nod, and then the publicist will set up the privacy barrier, and I just do the skin the way I do the skin. Because like, there's a basic science lesson here, is that we know that light reflects and that dark absorbs. So the darker your skin, you can actually wear more makeup, still look natural, but to have the reflection and the glow. And I can always see, you know, the random fashion moments in a magazine where, like, the makeup artist definitely did the okay, cool tap, tap, tap on the brown model, because their skin is just, it's just like not there. It's not, they didn't respect the dimension. They just kind of went tap, 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 and they didn't lay the color where it needed to be laid because they listened to some beauty director tell them, we just want you to like tap, 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 and you're done. And I'm like, no, like, I need you to like, it's like this old school way of doing makeup where like what you and I, how you and I would wear a foundation, which would be generally like one color all over with maybe a little bright in the middle. That's not what you do on brown skin. And you book this client that you think is obviously beautiful and dynamic and amazing, right? To be on your cover. She clearly trusts me. I've been doing her makeup 4 years, 5 years. And then you're not going to trust me to like do what I do to make her look amazing for your shoot. You know what I mean? So it's just like that, where like, I get what you mean about like, you want it to look clean and fresh and natural, but like, I know how to do that. And please, like, can you just stop poking your head in every 5 minutes when you see me put something on that you don't expect because you've never seen someone do it before?
It sounds like we are deeply missing a lot of education, and the same amount of education that we put into learning how to do white skin, we need to put in the same amount that goes into all the other different skin types.
Do you remember?
That's what it sounds like.
Do you remember when, was it Lindsay Peoples? She did that, what's it like to be black in fashion for the cut, right?
She came on this show.
She came, I listened to her podcast. It was amazing. I was like crying reading it. And I will never forget, because she's one of my best friends, my girl Kalana Barfield Brown, who was a beauty director or editor at large for InStyle at the time. And now she's just freelance on her own, but basically, if you guys haven't read this article, it's just about like, she asked a zillion black people in fashion and beauty what it was really like, and they were very honest. And one thing Kalana said was, I don't understand why I am expected to go to all of the beauty events that might not apply to me, but when I go to like a Black Opal or a Motions Hair, I only see black editors. Where are your white editors at this? I go to brands that don't make anything that I use because I'm covering beauty, but like the white editors are not covering all aspects of beauty. So like, what is that about? I'm like, I look at like my favorite covers that I've had, maybe like of Issa, where like her Essence cover, her Glamour cover.
That felt like a game changer for me.
I'm so obsessed. It's like my favorite cover ever. It's my favorite.
You guys have not seen that Essence cover. It's really, really something so beautiful.
Thank you. It's so, I'm just obsessed with it. And it's her favorite cover too. She says it. She's like, it's my favorite cover of all time. And like, and I love her Glamour cover. And I just feel like, I mean, Essence definitely obviously let me live. Their direction was Carnival. And then they just let me live as far as like, they were like, we trust what you do with Issa. And like Glamour definitely was like, we want the natural look for this, but we want you to do it how you do it. You know what I mean? And I love both of those covers of her. And it's just like, when we're allowed to work, and it just makes the environment on set better. And I don't have to feel like I'm hiding behind anything. And I'm just like, I don't think like, if you were to look at maybe like that Glamour cover, like she has like a no makeup look on that Glamour cover. And I don't think that she looks made up at all, but she definitely has more on than the like tap, tap, tap that they, you know, most magazines would tell you to do, because that's what you can do on like a model that's like your complexion. You know what I mean? Because on you, I can just tap, tap, tap and your skin will glow. You know what I mean? It's just a different thing. And until, you know, these beauty and fashion directors sort of understand that, it's still just feels like an uphill battle sometimes.
How are you feeling about, I'm sure this is probably a sensitive question, but how are you feeling about that whole, the industry in general? Because I mean, look, at the end of the day, once this dies down a little bit, we're talking about coronavirus here, I'm sure Issa and I'm sure the clients that you're closest with will feel some sort of comfortability to have you in their home. You guys are friends. Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
We know that eventually like that will happen, but like, where's your head at in terms of the industry, in terms of being on set, in terms of doing makeup for these big moments? Like, what are you thinking for the future and what's kind of worrying you most right now?
I mean, I had like a late night moment the other night where I was kind of freaking out and Sean was like trying to calm me down. But a lot of our big moments are the Met Gala and Oscars and Emmys and TCAs and, you know, Hollywood Foreign Press Luncheon, and just like so many, you know, our checks come from just like the fact that these clients need to be seen everywhere, right? And obviously that's not going to happen. So that is freaking me out a little bit. You know, I think there's going to be like a change in press for a while. And I don't know if you saw like the Disney sing along, like the way they did it. So my husband, Sean, who you know, and I he was debating saying he thought this could like lower production values and costs in general. He's like, because it's Disney, which is like the biggest, most polished company in the world, is okay putting out content that looks like that. And it was a huge hit. They're doing a second one. Like, it was so fun. Everyone's just zooming from their home. Like, why would people then spend so much? And people are, again, going back to the authenticity, people enjoy like the authenticity of like celebrities who
have like being home.
Yeah, they're home. My hair is not done. My makeup's like, yeah. I did it myself, like whatever. And it's real. So like, how much are consumers going to want like hyper-produced content again? Like, I was thinking like the other day of press weeks, right? Like, we fly to New York and it's, you know, you hit the ground running and it's Good Morning America, The View, 6 press stops, a magazine, late night TV, all these things. And I'm like, maybe for a while it will be, because all of these shows and networks obviously have West Coast bureaus. So maybe it becomes like we can sort of slowly either let people into homes or they can set up outposts. So like, why do we all need to fly for her to be on Good Morning America at 7 a.m.? In New York, like, why do we only...
No, totally.
Like, why can't...
I think it's made us rethink the capabilities of the things that we can do from here.
So, like, can we just glam... So, I feel like there's going to be less travel, especially in the next year or two. I mean, I feel like life will come back a bit, but I definitely feel like people are going to be like, this travel's unnecessary. You don't need to do it. And I think like there's going to be a lot of local, even local to New York for LA, and the same thing for talent that lives in New York and glam people that live in New York, like, local to LA press. So that, I think, is going to be an okay thing. Like, I think we're going to be able to either, now we can have a small crew either come into your home, or like Good Morning America sets up an LA studio and like we go into the LA studio and do a feed or whatever that is.
What's the tip that you have for makeup artists right now that are at home?
It's funny. I probably should be doing more makeup right now, but I am so, it's funny what you got to be very specific in your asks, right? Because I was really busy and I was like, oh my God, I just need a break. I was like, no, not like this, not like this.
Right. I think everybody's feeling that.
Right. But I'm also like, I get so burned out on washing brushes. I get so burned out on having to pack and unpack my kit. So it's almost like, I'm like, okay, well, I am going to embrace.
Joanna's kit is the craziest thing I have ever seen in my whole life.
So crazy.
It's something special.
But I was like, I'm going to embrace this break. And like, part of me is like, I don't feel like making dirty brushes right now. I don't feel like packing and unpacking my kit right now. I'm like, I'm going to embrace the break from it. I only put on makeup. Like, I did like a tutorial for The Wing last week. I did a tutorial for...
Oh, it was so good. Where can we watch that still?
It's on YouTube.
Is it on your website?
It's on YouTube.
Okay, cool. It was really good. If you guys haven't seen it, go check it out.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's probably, I'm sure it's like linked on The Wing's YouTube as well. But yeah, it's on YouTube. And I'm about to do a brow tutorial because people keep asking. But other than that,
great.
I'm not doing makeup. I mean, I also have a 5-year-old, so like really like morning to night, it's her. But
it's hard. I have so much empathy for parents right now.
It's really hard, you know, and aside from just having to entertain her and, you know, you have this like fear that like her social interaction is being stunted or her education is being slowed or you're creating some sort of like, you know, OCD about like cleanliness, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but like, let's not go crazy here. Like, you can touch people, like,
right?
And like a weird, like, you can't hug people, you can't touch. I'm like, I don't want to give her that. Kids are resilient, like I said, and I think she's fine. And you know, she basically is like, I cannot wait to hug my friends. And I'm like, good. Like, I'm glad that you're not thinking like you can't touch people ever again. And
yeah,
but yeah, so there's that. I am really grateful that I grew up in a time where certain electives were not considered unnecessary for school. Like, I grew up and took home economics, and it has proven invaluable at this time as far as the basics of cooking, but also just like the stupid things. I just understand how to stock my kitchen. I understand what order I need to, I organize the proteins in the fridge based on when they're going to expire. All those
things. Do you guys know what I did on Saturday night? I had the most wild Saturday night. sat at my dining room table and was on YouTube for about an hour and a half learning how to properly store every single vegetable and fruit you can possibly think of.
Important
and like
information.
Not just like important information. Like there's like we're throwing things in the fridge that shouldn't be in the fridge. And like I didn't know that. No one taught me that. Yep. So like this time has been you're totally spot on.
Yeah.
Like I am learning. I'm like totally leaning into that right now and like learning what
absolutely
can be frozen and what cannot be frozen.
Absolutely. And that and about like once you thought something, you cannot refreeze any portion of like things like that. These are things that we were taught in school that I think are not taught anymore. And things that were never taught.
They're not.
Also
that, I didn't have that in school.
Yeah, no, you know, for you, it was definitely gone by the time because you're a lot younger than me. And also, I can't help but think about things that are not taught that should be taught, like how to do your taxes. Like, there's people that cannot get a stimulus check because they
can't
didn't file taxes last year because, but no one's ever taught people.
They don't know how.
They don't know how to file their taxes. And people are young and they didn't know they
it's
had to
insane.
File taxes last year. It's just crazy. Like, we're not teaching the right thing.
What's your favorite beauty trend that's come out of quarantine?
I mean, I don't know about a trend that's coming out of quarantine, but I think the trend that, I don't know if it's my favorite yet, but
I've seen some crazy things
coming out of quarantine. I think lashes and brows are going to be a thing because a lot of people are going to really be wearing masks. I think lips are going to be an afterthought. And I think everyone learning how to put on lashes
like
is going to be important.
Here.
Yeah. Because that's what you're going to
so
see.
Funny.
Like who cares about a red lip, right? It's definitely going to be
totally.
Like a lashes and brow situation. So I definitely need to do this brow tinting tutorial. And yeah, I think that's going to be the trend. And then like, I think like once we're allowed to, I think people are going to go crazy with their nails again, because I feel we're about to go back into a nail art zone because again, you can't express on half your face and people are losing their minds about not
for
being
sure.
able to do their nails.
All
people
in.
Are just going to be so happy to just be able to go get it done. I mean, I want a facial so bad. I can't even like explain. I want a massage. Like,
oh,
ugh.
I can't wait.
Oh God.
I know. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming
of
on.
Course,
I adore you.
I love you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Friend of a Friend. Before you go, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at tiermedia.com. And for more behind the scenes of the show, visit us at friendofafriend.us and follow me at Liv Perez on Instagram. Don't forget the two Vs. See you next week.